was a cave to hide in. A dark burrow in the earth, a place where no eyes could stare at her. Once, sitting in her pillowed chair, she considered having a secret door built so that she would have an avenue of escape. And then a feeling, rather than a thought, threw out the plan. She wouldn't be protected then. If she could get out, something could get in. That something which had begun to crouch outside the house, to crawl close to the walls at night, and to rise silently, trying to look through the windows. It required more and more willpower for Kate to leave the house on Monday afternoons. When Cal began to follow her, she had a terrible leap of fear. And when she waited for him behind the privet, she was very near to panic. But now her head dug deep in her soft pillows, and her eyes felt the gentle weight of the bromide. Chapter 41. The nation slid imperceptibly toward war, frightened and at the same time attracted. People hadn't felt the shaking emotion of war in nearly 60 years. The Spanish affair was more nearly an expedition than a war. Mr. Wilson was re-elected president in November on his platform promise to keep us out of the war, and at the same time he was instructed to take a firm hand, which inevitably meant war. Business picked up, and prices began to rise. British purchasing agents roved about the country, buying food and cloth and metal and chemicals. A charge of excitement ran through the country. People didn't really believe in war, even while they planned it. The Salinas Valley lived about as it always had. Cal walked to school with Aaron.
"You look tired," Aaron said.
"Do I?
I heard you come in last night, 4 o'clock. What did you do so late?"
"I was walking around, thinking."
"How would you like to quit school and go back to the ranch?"
"What for?"
"We could make some money for Father."
"I'm going to college. I wish I could go now. Everybody's laughing at us. I want to get out of town."
"You act mad."
"I'm not mad, but I didn't lose the money. I didn't have a crazy lettuce idea. But people laugh at me just the same. And I don't know if there's enough money for college."
"He didn't mean to lose the money."
"But he lost it."
Cal said, "You've got this year to finish, and next before you can go to college."
"You think I don't know it?
If you worked hard, maybe you could take entrance examinations next summer and go in the fall."
Aaron swung around.
"I couldn't do it."
"I think you could.
Why don't you talk to the principal? And I bet the Reverend Rolfe would help you."
Aaron said, "I want to get out of this town. I don't ever want to come back. They still call us lettuce heads. They laugh at us."
"How about Abra?"
"Abra will do what's best."
Cal asked, "Would she want you to go away?"
"Abra's going to do what I want her to do."
Cal thought for a moment.
"I'll tell you what. I'm going to try to make some money. If you knuckle down and pass examinations a year early, why, I'll help you through college."
"You will?"
"Sure I will.
Why, I'll go and see the principal right away."
He quickened his steps. Cal called, "Aaron, wait.
Listen, if he says he thinks you can do it, don't tell Father."
"Why not?"
"I was just thinking how nice it would be if you went to him and told him you'd done it."
"I don't see what difference it makes."
"You don't?"
"No, I don't," said Aaron. "It sounds silly to me."
Cal had a violent urge to shout, "I know who our mother is. I can show her to you."
That would cut through and get inside of Aaron.
Cal met Abra in the hall before the school bell rang. "What's the matter with Aaron?" he demanded.
"I don't know."
"Yes, you do," he said.
"He's just in a cloud. I think it's that minister."
"Does he walk home with you?"
"Sure he does, but I can see right through him. He's wearing wings."
He's still ashamed about the lettuce.
I know he is, said Abra. I try to talk him out of it. Maybe he's enjoying it.
What do you mean?
Nothing, said Abra.
After supper that night, Cal said, Father, would you mind if I went down to the ranch Friday afternoon?
Adam turned in his chair.
What for?
I just want to see. Just want to look around.
Does Aaron want to go?
No, I want to go alone.
I don't see why you shouldn't. Lee, do you see any reason why you shouldn't go?
No, said Lee. He studied Cal.
Thinking seriously of going to farming?
I might. If you'd let me take it over, I'd farm it, Father.
The lease has more than a year to run, Adam said.
After that, can I farm it?
How about school?
I'll be through school.
Well, we'll see, said Adam. You might want to go to college.
When Cal started for the front door, Lee followed and walked out with him.
Can you tell me what it's about? Lee asked.
I just want to look around.
All right. I guess I'm left out.
Lee turned to go back into the house. Then he called,
Cal!
The boy stopped.
You worried, Cal?
No.
I've got $5,000 if you ever need it.
Why would I need it?
I don't know, said Lee.
Will Hamilton liked his glass cage of an office in the garage. His business interests were much wider than the automobile agency, but he didn't get another office. He loved the movement that went on outside his square glass cage, and he had put in double glass to kill the noise of the garage. He sat in his big red leather swivel chair, and most of the time he enjoyed his life. When people spoke of his brother Joe making so much money in advertising in the East, Will always said he himself was a big frog in a little puddle.
I'd be afraid to go to a big city, he said. I'm just a country boy.
And he liked the laugh that always followed. It proved to him that his friends knew he was well off. Cal came in to see him one Saturday morning. Seeing Will's puzzled look, he said,
I'm Cal Trask.
Oh, sure. Lord, you're getting to be a big boy. Is your father down?
No, I came alone.
Well, sit down.
I don't suppose you smoke. Sometimes, cigarettes.
Will slid a package of Murads across the desk. Cal opened the box and then closed it.
I don't think I will right now.
Will looked at the dark-faced boy and he liked him. He thought, this boy is sharp. He's nobody's fool.
I guess you'll be going into business pretty soon, he said.
Yes, sir. I thought I might run the ranch when I got out of high school.
There's no money in that, said Will. Farmers don't make any money. It's the man who buys from him and sells. You'll never make any money farming.
Will knew that Cal was feeling him, testing him, observing him, and he approved of that.
And Cal had made up his mind. But first he asked,
Mr. Hamilton, you haven't any children, have you?
Well, no. And I'm sorry about that. I guess I'm sorriest about that.
And then,
what makes you ask?
Cal ignored the question.
Would you give me some advice?
Will felt a glow of pleasure.
If I can, I'll be glad to. What is it you want to know?
And then Cal did something Will Hamilton approved even more. He used candor as a weapon. He said,
I want to make a lot of money. I want you to tell me how.
Will overcame his impulse to laugh. Naive as the statement was, he didn't think Cal was naive.
Everybody wants that, he said. What do you mean by a lot of money?
$20,000 or $30,000?
Good God, said Will, and he screeched his chair forward. And now he did laugh, but not in derision.
Cal smiled along with Will's laughter.
Will said, Can you tell me why you want to make so much?
Yes, sir, said Cal. I can.
And Cal opened the box of Murads and took out one of the oval, cork-tipped cigarettes and lighted it.
I'll tell you why, he said.
Will leaned his chair back in enjoyment.
My father lost a lot of money.
I know, said Will. I warned him not to try to ship lettuce across the country.
You did? Why did you?
There were no guarantees, said Will. A businessman has to protect himself. If anything happened, he was finished. And it happened. Go on.
I want to make enough money to give him back what he lost.
Will gaped at him.
Why? He asked. I want to.
Will said, Are you fond of him?
Yes.
Will's fleshy face contorted, and a memory swept over him like a chilling wind. He didn't move slowly over the past. It was all there in one flash, all of the years. A picture, a feeling, and a despair. All stopped the way a fast camera stops the world. There was the flashing Samuel, beautiful as dawn, with a fancy like a swallow's flight, and the brilliant, brooding Tom, who was dark fire, Una, who rode the storms, and lovely Molly, Desi of laughter, George, handsome and with a sweetness that filled a room like the perfume of flowers. And there was Joe, the youngest, the beloved. Each one, without effort, brought some gift into the family. Nearly everyone has his box of secret pain, shared with no one. Will had concealed his well, laughed loud, exploited perverse virtues, and never let his jealousy go wandering. He thought of himself as slow, doltish, conservative, uninspired. No great dream lifted him high, and no despair forced self-destruction. He was always on the edge, trying to hold on to the rim of the family with what gifts he had, care and reason, application. He kept the books, hired the attorneys, called the undertaker, and eventually paid the bills. The others didn't even know they needed him. He had the ability to get money and to keep it. He thought the Hamiltons despised him for his one ability. He had loved them doggedly, had always been at hand with his money to pull them out of their errors. He thought they were ashamed of him, and he fought bitterly for their recognition. All of this was in the frozen wind that blew through him. His slightly bulging eyes were damp as he stared past Cal, and the boy asked,
What's the matter, Mr. Hamilton? Don't you feel well?
Will had sensed his family, but he hadn't understood them. And they had accepted him without knowing there was anything to understand. And now this boy came along. Will understood him, felt him, sensed him, recognized him. This was the son he should have had, or the brother, or the father. And the cold wind of memory changed to a warmth toward Cal, which gripped him in the stomach and pushed up against his lungs. He forced his attention to the glass office. Cal was sitting back in his chair, waiting. Will didn't know how long his silence had lasted.
I was thinking, he said lamely.
He made his voice stern.
You asked me something. I'm a businessman. I don't give things away. I sell them.
Yes, sir.
Cal was watchful, but he felt that Will Hamilton liked him. Will said,
I want to know something, and I want the truth. Will you tell me the truth?
I don't know, said Cal.
I like that. How do you know until you know the question? I like that. That's smart and honest. Listen, you have a brother. Does your father like him better than you?
Everybody does, said Cal calmly. Everybody loves Aaron.
Do you?
Yes, sir. At least... Yes, I do.
What's the at least?
Sometimes I think he's stupid, but I like him.
Now, how about your father?
I love him, said Cal.
And he loves your brother better.
I don't know.
Now, you say you want to give back the money your father lost. Why?
Ordinarily, Cal's eyes were squinted and cautious, but now they were so wide that they seemed to look around and through Will. Cal was as close to his own soul as it is possible to get.
My father is good, he said. I want to make it up to him because I'm not good.
If you do that, wouldn't you be good?
No, said Cal. I think bad.
Will had never met anyone who spoke so nakedly. He was near to embarrassment because of the nakedness, and he knew how safe Cal was in his stripped honesty.
Only one more, he said, and I won't mind if you don't answer it.
I don't think I'd answer it. Here it is.
Suppose you should get this money and give it to your father. Would it cross your mind that you were trying to buy his love?
Yes, sir. It would. And it would be true.
That's all I want to ask. That's all.
Will leaned forward and put his hands against his sweating, pulsing forehead. He couldn't remember when he had been so shaken. And in Cal, there was a cautious leap of triumph. He knew he had won, and he closed his face against showing it. Will raised his head and took off his glasses and wiped the moisture from them.
Let's go outside, he said. Let's go for a drive.
Will drove the big Winton now, with a hood as long as a coffin and a powerful panting mutter in its bowels. He drove south from King City over the county road, through the gathering forces of spring, and the meadowlarks flew ahead, bubbling melody from the fence wires. Pico Blanco stood up against the west with a full head of snow, and in the valley the lines of eucalyptus which stretched across the valley to break the winds were gleaming silver with new leaves. When he came to the side road that led to the home draw of the Trask place, Will pulled up on the side of the road. He hadn't spoken since the Winton rolled out of King City. The big motor idled with a deep whisper. Will, looking straight ahead, said,
Cal, do you want to be partners with me?
Yes, sir.
I don't like to take a partner without money. I could lend you the money, but there's only trouble in that.
I can get money, said Cal.
How much?
$5,000.
I don't believe it.
Cal didn't answer.
I believe it, said Will.
Borrowed?
Yes, sir.
What interest?
None.
That's a good trick. Where will you get it?
I won't tell you, sir.
Will shook his head and laughed. He was filled with pleasure.
Maybe I'm being a fool, but I believe you. And I'm not a fool.
He gunned his motor and then let it idle again.
I want you to listen. Do you read the papers?
Yes, sir.
We're going to be in this war any minute now.
That's what it looks like.
Well, a lot of people think so. Now, do you know the present price of beans? I mean, what can you sell 100 sacks for in Salinas?
I'm not sure. I think about 3 to 3.5 cents a pound.
What do you mean you're not sure? How do you know that?
Well, I was thinking about asking my father to let me run the ranch.
I see. But you don't want a farm. You're too smart. Your father's tenant is named Rantani. He's a Swiss-Italian, a good farmer. He's put nearly 500 acres under cultivation. If we can guarantee him 5 cents a pound and give him a seed loan, he'll plant beans. So will every other farmer around here. We could contract 5,000 acres of beans.
Cal said, What are we going to do with 5-cent beans in a 3-cent market?
Oh, yes.
But how can we be sure?
Will said, Are we partners?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Will.
Yes, Will.
How soon can you get $5,000?
By next Wednesday.
Shake. Solemnly, the stout man and the lean, dark boy shook hands. Will, still holding Cal's hand, said, Now we're partners. I have a contact with the British Purchasing Agency, and I have a friend in the Quartermaster Corps. I bet we can sell all the dried beans we can find at 10 cents a pound or more.
When can you sell?
I'll sell before we sign anything. Now,
Would you like to go up to the old place and talk to Rantanny?
Yes, sir, said Cal.
Will double-clutched the Winton, and the big green car lumbered into the side road. Chapter 42. A war always comes to someone else. In Salinas, we were aware that the United States was the greatest and most powerful nation in the world. Every American was a rifleman by birth, and one American was worth 10 or 20 foreigners in a fight. Pershing's expedition into Mexico after Villa had exploded one of our myths for a little while. We had truly believed that Mexicans can't shoot straight, and besides, were lazy and stupid. When our own Troop C came wearily back from the border, they said that none of this was true. Mexicans could shoot straight, goddammit. And Villa's horsemen had outridden and outlasted our town boys. The 2 evenings a month of training hadn't toughened them very much. And last, the Mexicans seemed to have outthought and out-ambushed Black Jack Pershing. When the Mexicans were joined by their ally, dysentery, it was god-awful. Some of our boys didn't really feel good again for years. Somehow we didn't connect the Germans with Mexicans. We went right back to our myths. One American was as good as 20 Germans. This being true, we had only to act in a stern manner to bring the Kaiser to heel. He wouldn't dare interfere with our trade, but he did. He wouldn't stick out his neck and sink our ships, and he did. It was stupid, but he did, and so there was nothing for it but to fight him. The war, at first anyway, was for other people. I, my family and friends, had kind of bleacher seats, and it was pretty exciting. And just as war is always for somebody else, so it was also true that someone else always gets killed. And mother of God, that wasn't true either. The dreadful telegrams began to sneak sorrowfully in, and it was everybody's brother. Here we were, over 6,000 miles from the anger and the noise, and that didn't save us. It wasn't much fun then. The Liberty Bells could parade in white caps and uniforms of white sharkskin. Our uncle could rewrite his 4th of July speech and use it to sell bonds. We in high school could wear olive drab and campaign hats and learn the manual of arms from the physics teacher. But Jesus Christ, Marty Hopps dead. The Burgess boy, from across the street. The handsome one our little sister was in love with from the time she was 3, blown to bits. And the gangling, shuffling, loose-jointed boys carrying suitcases were marching awkwardly down Main Street to the Southern Pacific Depot. They were sheepish, and the Salinas band marched ahead of them, playing the Stars and Stripes Forever. And the families walking along beside them were crying, and the music sounded like a dirge. The draftees wouldn't look at their mothers. They didn't dare. We'd never thought the war could happen to us. There were some in Salinas who began to talk softly in the pool rooms and the bars. These had private information from a soldier. We weren't getting the truth. Our men were being sent in without guns. Troop ships were sunk, and the government wouldn't tell us. The German army was so far superior to ours that we didn't have a chance. That Kaiser was a smart fellow. He was getting ready to invade America. But would Wilson tell us this? He would not. And usually these carrion talkers were the same ones who had said one American was worth 20 Germans in a scrap. The same ones. Little groups of British in their outlandish uniforms, but they did look smart, moved about the country, buying everything that wasn't nailed down and paying for it and paying big. A good many of the British purchasing men were crippled, but they wore their uniforms just the same. Among other things, they bought beans, because beans are easy to transport, and they don't spoil, and a man can damn well live on them. Beans were 12.5 cents a pound and hard to find. And farmers wished they hadn't contracted their beans for a lousy 2 cents a pound above the going price 6 months ago. The nation and the Salinas Valley changed its songs. At first we sang of how we would knock the hell out of Helgoland and hang the Kaiser, and march over there and clean up the mess them damn foreigners had made. And then suddenly we sang, "In the war's red curse stands the Red Cross nurse. She's the rose of no man's land." And we sang, "Hello, Central, give me heaven, 'cause my daddy's there." And we sang, "Just a baby's prayer at twilight when lights are low. She climbs upstairs and says her prayers. Oh, God, please tell my daddy Thaddy must take care." I guess we were like a tough but inexperienced little boy who gets punched in the nose in the first flurry, and it hurts, and we wished it was over. Chapter 43. Late in the summer, Lee came in off the street carrying his big market basket. Lee had become American conservative in his clothes since he had lived in Salinas. He regularly wore black broadcloth when he went out of the house. His shirts were white, his collars high and stiff, and he affected narrow black string ties, like those which were once the badge for Southern senators. His hats were black, round of crown and straight of brim, and uncrushed, as though he still left room for a coiled queue. He was immaculate. Once Adam had remarked on the quiet splendor of Lee's clothes, and Lee had grinned at him. "I have to do it," he said. "One must be very rich to dress as badly as you do. The poor are forced to dress well." "Poor!" Adam exploded. "You'll be lending us money before we're through." "That might be," said Lee. This afternoon, he set his heavy basket on the floor. "I'm going to try to make a winter melon soup," he said. "Chinese cooking. I have a cousin in Chinatown, and he told me how. My cousin is in the firecracker and fantan business." "I thought you didn't have any relatives," said Adam. "All Chinese are related, and the ones named Lee are closest," said Lee. "My cousin is a Sui Dong. Recently he went into hiding for his health, and he learned to cook. You stand the melon in a pot, cut off the top carefully, put in a whole chicken, mushrooms, water chestnuts, leeks, and just a touch of ginger. Then you put the top back on the melon and cook it as slowly as possible for 2 days. Ought to be good." Adam was lying back in his chair, his palms clasped behind his head, and he was smiling at the ceiling.
"Good, Lee, good," he said.
"You didn't even listen," said Lee. Adam drew himself upright. He said,
"You think you know your own children, and then you find you don't at all."
Lee asked, "Has some detail of their lives escaped you?" he asked. Adam chuckled.
"I only found out by accident," he said. "I knew that Aaron wasn't around very much this summer, but I thought he was just out playing."
"Playing," said Lee. "He hasn't played for years."
"Well, whatever he does," Adam continued. "Today I met Mr. Kilkenny, you know, from the high school. He thought I knew all about it. Do you know what that boy is doing?"
"No," said Lee.
"He's covered all next year's work. He's going to take examinations for college and save a year. And Kilkenny is confident that he'll pass. Now, what do you think of that?"
"Remarkable," said Lee.
"Why is he doing it?"
"Why, to save a year."
"What does he want to save it for?"
"God damn it, Lee, he's ambitious. Can't you understand that?"
"No," said Lee. "I never could."
Adam said,
"He never spoke of it. I wonder if his brother knows."
"I guess Aaron wants it to be a surprise. We shouldn't mention it until he does."
"I guess you're right. You know, Lee, I'm proud of him. Terribly proud. This makes me feel good. I wish Cal had some ambition."
"Maybe he has," said Lee. "Maybe he has some kind of a secret, too."
"Maybe. God knows we haven't seen much of him lately, either. Do you think it's good for him to be away so much?"
"Cal's trying to find himself," said Lee. "I guess this personal hide-and-seek is not unusual. And some people are it all their lives. Hopelessly it."
"Just think," said Adam.
a whole year's work ahead. When he tells us, we ought to have a present for him.
A gold watch, said Lee.
That's right, said Adam. I'm going to get one and have it engraved and ready. What should it say?
The jeweler will tell you, said Lee. You take the chicken out after 2 days and cut it off the bone and put the meat back.
What chicken?
Winter melon soup, said Lee.
Have we got enough money to send him to college, Lee?
If we're careful and he doesn't develop expensive tastes.
He wouldn't, Adam said.
I didn't think I would, but I have. Lee inspected the sleeve of his coat with admiration.
The rectory of St. Paul's Episcopal Church was large and rambling. It had been built for ministers with large families. Mr. Rolfe, unmarried and simple in his taste, closed up most of the house. But when Aaron needed a place to study, he gave him a large room and helped him with his studies. Mr. Rolfe was fond of Aaron. He liked the angelic beauty of his face and his smooth cheeks, his narrow hips and long, straight legs. He liked to sit in the room and watch Aaron's face straining with effort to learn. He understood why Aaron couldn't work at home in an atmosphere not conducive to hard, clean thought. Mr. Rolfe felt that Aaron was his product, his spiritual son, his contribution to the church. He saw him through his travail of celibacy and felt that he was guiding him into calm waters. Their discussions were long and close and personal. "I know I'm criticized," Mr. Rolfe said. "I happen to believe in a higher church than some people. No one can tell me that confession is not just as important a sacrament as communion. And you mind my word, I'm going to bring it back, but cautiously, gradually.
When I have a church, I'll do it too."
"It requires great tact," said Mr. Rolfe.
Aaron said, "I wish we had in our church, well, I might as well say it. I wish we had something like the Augustines or the Franciscans, some place to withdraw. Sometimes I feel dirty. I want to get away from the dirt and be clean."
"I know how you feel," Mr. Rolfe said earnestly. "But there I cannot go along with you. I can't think that our Lord Jesus would want his priesthood withdrawn from service to the world. Think how he insisted that we preach the gospel, help the sick and poor, even lower ourselves into filth to raise sinners from the slime. We must keep the exactness of his example always before us."
His eyes began to glow, and his voice took on the throatiness he used in sermons.
"Perhaps I shouldn't tell you this, and I hope you won't find any pride in me in telling it, but there is a kind of glory in it. For the last 5 weeks, a woman has been coming to evening service. I don't think you can see her from the choir. She sits always in the last row on the left-hand side. Yes, you can see her, too. She's off at an angle. Yes, you can see her. She wears a veil, and she always leaves before I can get back after recessional."
"Who is she?" Aaron asked.
"Well, you'll have to learn these things. I made very discreet inquiries, and you would never guess. She is the owner of a house of ill fame."
"Here in Salinas?"
"Here in Salinas." Mr. Rolfe leaned forward. "Aaron, I can see your revulsion. You must get over that. Don't forget our Lord and Mary Magdalene. Without pride, I say, I would be glad to raise her up."
"What does she want here?" Aaron demanded.
"Perhaps what we have to offer, salvation. It will require great tact. I can see how it will be, and mark my words, these people are timid. One day there will come a tap on my door, and she will beg to come in. And then, Aaron, I pray that I may be wise and patient. You must believe me. When that happens, when a lost soul seeks the light, it is the highest and most beautiful experience a priest can have. That's what we are for, Aaron. That's what we are for."
Mr. Rolfe controlled his breathing with difficulty. "I pray God I may not fail," he said.
Adam Trask thought of the war in terms of his own now dimly remembered campaign against the Indians. No one knew anything about huge and general war. Lee read European history, trying to discern from the filaments of the past some pattern of the future. Liza Hamilton died, with a pinched little smile on her mouth, and her cheekbones were shockingly high when the red was gone from them. And Adam waited impatiently for Aaron to bring news of his examinations. The massive gold watch lay under his handkerchiefs in the top drawer of his bureau, and he kept it wound and set and checked its accuracy against his own watch. Lee had his instructions. On the evening of the day of the announcement, he was to cook a turkey and bake a cake. "We'll want to make a party of it," Adam said. "What would you think of champagne?" "Very nice," said Lee. "Did you ever read von Clausewitz?" "Who's he?" "Not very reassuring reading," said Lee. "One bottle of champagne?" "That's enough. It's just for toasts, you know. Makes a party of it." It didn't occur to Adam that Aaron might fail. One afternoon, Aaron came in and asked Lee, "Where's Father?" "He's shaving." "I won't be in for dinner," said Aaron. In the bathroom, he stood behind his father and spoke to the soap-faced image in the mirror. "Mr. Rolfe asked me to have dinner at the rectory." Adam wiped his razor on a folded piece of toilet paper. "That's nice," he said. "Can I get a bath?" "I'll be out of here in just a minute," said Adam. When Aaron walked through the living room and said goodnight and went out, Cal and Adam looked after him. "He got into my cologne," said Cal. "I can still smell him." "It must be quite a party," Adam said. "I don't blame him for wanting to celebrate. That was a hard job." "Celebrate?" "The exams, didn't he tell you? He passed them."
"Oh, yes, the exams," said Adam. "Yes, he told me. A fine job. I'm proud of him. I think I'll get him a gold watch."
Cal said sharply,
"He didn't tell you." "Oh, yes. Yes, he did. He told me this morning." "He didn't know this morning," said Cal, and he got up and went out.
He walked very fast in the gathering darkness, out Central Avenue, past the park, and past Stonewall Jackson Smart's house, clear to the place beyond the streetlights where the street became a county road and angled to avoid Tollett's farmhouse. At 10 o'clock, Lee, going out to mail a letter, found Cal sitting on the lowest step of the front porch.
"What happened to you?" he asked.
"I went for a walk."
"What's the matter with Aaron?"
"I don't know.
He seems to have some kind of grudge."
"Want to walk to the post office with me?"
"No."
"What are you sitting out here for?"
"I'm going to beat the hell out of him."
"Don't do it," said Lee.
"Why not?"
"Because I don't think you can. He'd slaughter you."
"I guess you're right," said Cal.
"The son of a bitch."
"Watch your language." Cal laughed.
"I guess I'll walk along with you."
"Did you ever read von Clausewitz?"
"I never even heard of him."
When Aaron came home, it was Lee who was waiting for him on the lowest step of the front porch.
"I saved you from a licking," Lee said.
"Sit down."
"I'm going to bed."
"Sit down. I want to talk to you."
"Why didn't you tell your father you passed the tests?"
"He wouldn't understand."
"You got a bug up your ass."
"I don't like that kind of language."
"Why do you think I used it? I am not profane by accident."
"Aaron, your father has been living for this."
"How did he know about it?"
"You should have told him yourself."
"This is none of your business."
"I want you to go in and wake him up if he's asleep. But I don't think he'll be asleep. I want you to tell him."
"I won't do it,"
Lee said softly.
"Aaron, did you ever have to fight a little man, a man half your size?"
"What do you mean?"
"It's one of the most embarrassing things in the world. He won't stop, and pretty soon you have to hit him, and that's worse. Then you're really in trouble all around."
"What are you talking about?"
If you don't do as I tell you, Aaron, I'm going to fight you. Isn't that ridiculous?
Aaron tried to pass. Lee stood up in front of him, his tiny fists doubled ineffectually, his stance and position so silly that he began to laugh.
I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to try, he said.
Aaron nervously backed away from him, and when finally he sat down on the steps, Lee sighed deeply.
Thank heaven that's over, he said. It would have been awful. Look, Aaron, can't you tell me what's the matter with you? You always used to tell me.
Suddenly Aaron broke down.
I want to go away. It's a dirty town. No, it isn't. It's just the same as other places. I don't belong here. I wish we had never come here. I don't know what's the matter with me. I want to go away.
His voice rose to a wail. Lee put his arm around the broad shoulders to comfort him.
You're growing up. Maybe that's it, he said softly. Sometimes I think the world tests us most sharply then, and we turn inward and watch ourselves with horror. But that's not the worst. We think everybody is seeing into us. Then dirt is very dirty, and purity is shining white. Aaron, it will be over. Wait only a little while, and it will be over. That's not much relief to you because you don't believe it, but it's the best I can do for you. Try to believe that things are neither so good nor so bad as they seem to you now. Yes, I can help you. Go to bed now, and in the morning get up early and tell your father about the tests. Make it exciting. He's lonelier than you are because he has no lovely future to dream about. Go through the motions. Sam Hamilton said that. Pretend it's true, and maybe it will be. Go through the motions. Do that. And go to bed. I've got to bake a cake for breakfast. And, Aaron, your father left a present on your pillow.
Chapter 44. It was only after Aaron went away to college that Abra really got to know his family. Aaron and Abra had fenced themselves in with themselves. With Aaron gone, she attached herself to the other Trasks. She found that she trusted Adam more and loved Lee more than her own father. About Cal, she couldn't decide. He disturbed her sometimes with anger, sometimes with pain, and sometimes with curiosity. He seemed to be in a perpetual contest with her. She didn't know whether he liked her or not, so she didn't like him. She was relieved when, calling at the Trask house, Cal wasn't there. To look secretly at her, judge, appraise, consider, and look away when she caught him at it. Abra was a strong, straight, fine-breasted woman, developed and ready and waiting to take her sacrament. But waiting. She took to going to the Trask house after school, sitting with Lee, reading him parts of Aaron's daily letter. Aaron was lonely at Stanford. His letters were drenched with lonesome longing for his girl. Together they were matter of fact, but from the university 90 miles away, he made passionate love to her, shut himself off from the life around him. He studied, ate, slept, and wrote to Abra. And this was his whole life. In the afternoon, she sat in the kitchen with Lee and helped him to string beans or slip peas from their pods. Sometimes she made fudge, and very often she stayed to dinner rather than go home to her parents. There was no subject she couldn't discuss with Lee, and the few things she could talk about to her father and mother were thin and pale and tired and mostly not even true. There, Lee was different also. Abra wanted to tell Lee only true things, even when she wasn't quite sure what was true. Lee would sit smiling a little, and his quick, fragile hands flew about their work as though they had independent lives. Abra wasn't aware that she spoke exclusively of herself, and sometimes while she talked, Lee's mind wandered out and came back and went out again like a ranging dog, and Lee would nod at intervals and make a quiet humming sound. He liked Abra,
and he felt strength and goodness in her, and warmth, too. Her features had the bold, muscular strength which could result finally either in ugliness or in great beauty. Lee, musing through her talk, thought of the round, smooth faces of the Cantonese, his own breed. Even thin, they were moon-faced. Lee should have liked that kind best, since beauty must be somewhat like ourselves, but he didn't. When he thought of Chinese beauty, the iron, predatory faces of the Manchus came to his mind, arrogant and unyielding faces of a people who had authority by unquestioned inheritance. She said, "Maybe it was there all along. I don't know. He never talked much about his father. It was after Mr. Trask had the, you know, the lettuce. Aaron was angry then."
"Why?" Lee asked.
"People were laughing at him."
Lee's whole mind popped back.
"Laughing at Aaron? Why at him? He didn't have anything to do with it." "Well, that's the way he felt. Do you want to know what I think?"
"Of course," said Lee.
"I figured this out, and I'm not quite finished figuring. I thought he always felt, well, kind of crippled, maybe unfinished, because he didn't have a mother."
Lee's eyes opened wide and then drooped again. He nodded.
"I see.
Do you figure Cal is that way, too?"
"No." "Then why Aaron?" "Well, I haven't got that yet. Maybe some people need things more than others, or hate things more. My father hates turnips. He always did. Never came from anything. Turnips make him mad, real mad. Well, one time my mother was, well, huffy, and she made a casserole of mashed turnips with lots of pepper and cheese on top and got it all brown on top. My father ate half a dish of it before he asked what it was. My mother said turnips, and he threw the dish on the floor and got up and went out. I don't think he ever forgave her."
Lee chuckled. "He can forgive her because she said turnips.
But, Abra, suppose he'd asked, and she had said something else, and he liked it and had another dish. And then afterward he found out.
Why, he might have murdered her."
"I guess so. Well, anyway, I figure Aaron needed a mother more than Cal did. And I think he always blamed his father."
"Why?"
"I don't know. That's what I think."
"You do get around, don't you?"
"Shouldn't I?"
"Of course you should."
"Shall I make some fudge?"
"Not today. We still have some."
"What can I do?"
"You can pound flour into the top round. Will you eat with us?"
"No. I'm going to a birthday party, thank you." "Do you think he'll be a minister?"
"How do I know?" said Lee. "Maybe it's just an idea."
"I hope he doesn't," said Abra. And she clapped her mouth shut in astonishment at having said it.
Lee got up and pulled out the pastry board and laid out the red meat and a flour sifter beside it. "Use the back side of the knife," he said.
"I know."
She hoped he hadn't hurt her. But Lee asked, "Why don't you want him to be a minister?"
"I shouldn't say."
"You should say anything you want to. You don't have to explain." He went back to his chair, and Abra sifted flour over the steak and pounded the meat with a big knife. Tap, tap.
"I shouldn't talk like this."
Tap, tap. Lee turned his head away to let her take her own pace.
"He goes all one way," she said over the pounding. "If it's church, it's got to be high church." He was talking about how priests shouldn't be married.
"That's not the way his last letter sounded," Lee observed.
"I know. That was before."
Her knife stopped its pounding. Her face was young, perplexed pain.
"Lee, I'm not good enough for him."
"Now, what do you mean by that?"
"I'm not being funny. He doesn't think about me. He's made someone up, and it's like he put my skin on her. I'm not like that, not like the made-up one."
"What's she like?"
"Pure," said Abra. "Just absolutely pure. Nothing but pure. Never a bad thing. I'm not like that."
"Nobody is," said Lee.
"He doesn't know me. He doesn't even want to know me. He wants that white ghost." Lee rubbled a piece of cracker. Don't you like him? You're pretty young, but I don't think that makes any difference.
Of course I like him. I'm going to be his wife. But I want him to like me, too. How can he, if he doesn't know anything about me? I used to think he knew me. Now I'm not sure he ever did.
Maybe he's going through a hard time that isn't permanent. You're a smart girl. Very smart. Is it pretty hard trying to live up to the one in your skin?
I'm always afraid he'll see something in me that isn't the one he made up. I'll get mad, or I'll smell bad, or something else. He'll find out.
Maybe not, said Lee. But it must be hard living the lily maid, the goddess virgin, and the other all at once. Humans just do smell bad sometimes.
She moved toward the table. Lee, I wish...
Don't spill flour on my floor, he said.
What do you wish? It's from my figuring out. I think Aaron, when he didn't have a mother, why, he made her everything good he could think of.
That might be. And then you think he dumped it all on you.
She stared at him, and her fingers wandered delicately up and down the blade of the knife.
And you wish you could find some way to dump it all back?
Yes.
Suppose he wouldn't like you then?
I'd rather take a chance on that, she said. I'd rather be myself.
Lee said, I never saw anybody get mixed up in other people's business the way I do. And I'm a man who doesn't have a final answer about anything. Are you going to pound that meat, or shall I do it?
She went back to work. Do you think it's funny to be so serious when I'm not even out of high school? She asked.
I don't see how it could be any other way, said Lee. Laughter comes later, like wisdom teeth. And laughter at yourself comes last of all in a mad race with death, and sometimes it isn't in time.
Her tapping speeded up, and its beat became erratic and nervous. Lee moved 5 dried lima beans in patterns on the table, a line, an angle, a circle. The beating stopped. Is Mrs. Trask alive?
Lee's forefinger hung over a bean for a moment, and then slowly fell and pushed it to make the O into a Q. He knew she was looking at him. He could even see in his mind how her expression would be one of panic at her question. His thought raced like a rat new caught in a wire trap. He sighed and gave it up. He turned slowly and looked at her, and his picture had been accurate. Lee said tonelessly,
We've talked a lot, and I don't remember that we have ever discussed me, ever.
He smiled shyly.
Abra, let me tell you about myself. I'm a servant. I'm old. I'm Chinese. These 3 you know. I'm tired and I'm cowardly.
You're not, she began.
Be silent, he said. I am so cowardly. I will not put my finger in any human pie.
What do you mean?
Abra, is your father mad at anything except turnips?
Her face went stubborn. I asked you a question.
I didn't hear a question, he said softly, and his voice became confident. You didn't ask a question, Abra.
I guess you think I'm too young, Abra began. Lee broke in.
Once I worked for a woman of 35 who had successfully resisted experience, learning, and beauty. If she had been 6, she would have been the despair of her parents. And at 35, she was permitted to control money and the lives of people around her. No, Abra, age has nothing to do with it. If I had anything at all to say, I would say it to you.
The girl smiled at him. I'm clever, she said. Shall I be clever?
God help me, no, Lee protested.
Then you don't want me to try to figure it out?
I don't care what you do, as long as I don't have anything to do with it. I guess no matter how weak and negative a good man is, he has as many sins on him as he can bear. I have enough sins to trouble me. Maybe they aren't very fine sins compared to some, but the way I feel, they're all I can take care of. Please forgive me.
Abra reached across the table and touched the back of his hand with floury fingers. The yellow skin on his hand was tight and glazed. He looked down at the white powdery smudges her fingers left. Abra said, "My father wanted a boy. I guess he hates turnips and girls. He tells everyone how he gave him my crazy name, and though I called another, Abra came." Lee smiled at her. "You're such a nice girl," he said. "I'll buy some turnips tomorrow if you'll come to dinner." Abra asked softly, "Is she alive?" "Yes," said Lee. The front door slammed, and Cal came into the kitchen.
"Hello, Abra. Lee, is father home?"
"No, not yet." "What are you grinning all over for?"
Cal handed him a check.
"There, that's for you."
Lee looked at it.
"I didn't want interest," he said.
"It's better. I might want to borrow it back."
"You won't tell me where you got it?"
"No, not yet. I've got a good idea."
His eyes flicked to Abra.
"I have to go home now," she said.
Cal said,
"She might as well be in on it. I decided to do it Thanksgiving, and Abra will probably be around, and Aaron will be home."
"Do what?" she asked.
"I've got a present for my father."
"What is it?" Abra asked.
"I won't tell. You'll find out then."
"Does Lee know?"
"Yes, but he won't tell."
"I don't think I ever saw you so gay," Abra said. "I don't think I ever saw you gay at all." She discovered in herself a warmth for him. After Abra had gone, Cal sat down.
"I don't know whether to give it to him before Thanksgiving dinner or after," he said.
"After," said Lee.
"Have you really got the money?"
$15,000.
"Honestly?
You mean, did I steal it?"
"Yes."
"Honestly," said Cal.
"Remember how we had champagne for Aaron? We'll get champagne, and we'll maybe decorate the dining room. Maybe Abra will help."
"Do you really think your father wants money?"
"Why wouldn't he?"
"I hope you're right," said Lee.
"How have you been doing in school?"
"Not very well. I'll pick up after Thanksgiving," said Cal.
After school the next day, Abra hurried and caught up with Cal.
"Hello, Abra," he said. "You make good fudge." "That last was dry. It should be creamy."
"Lee is just crazy about you.
What have you done to him?"
"I like Lee," she said, and then,
"I want to ask you something, Cal."
"Yes?"
"What's the matter with Aaron?"
"What do you mean?"
"He just seems to think only about himself."
"I don't think that's very new. Have you had a fight with him?"
"No. When he had all that about going into the church and not getting married, I tried to fight with him, but he wouldn't."
"Not get married to you? I can't imagine that."
"Cal, he writes me love letters now, only they aren't to me."
"Then who are they to?"
"It's like they were to himself."
Cal said, "I know about the willow tree." She didn't seem surprised.
"Do you?"
she asked.
"Are you mad at Aaron?" "No, not mad. I just can't find him. I don't know him."
"Wait around," said Cal. "Maybe he's going through something."
"I wonder if I'll be all right. Do you think I could have been wrong all the time?"
"How do I know?"
"Cal," she said, "is it true that you go out late at night and even go to bad houses?"
"Yes," he said, "that's true."
"Did Aaron tell you?"
"No, not Aaron." "Well, why do you go there?"
He walked beside her and didn't answer.
"Tell me," she said.
What's it to you? Is it because you're bad? What's it sound like to you? I'm not good either.